Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A world where certain women are valued more than others, and you don't want to be one of them. That's the world Margaret Atwood depicts in her controversial novel, The Handmaid's Tale, which Hulu will turn into a television series Wednesday. Writer and executive producer Bruce Miller joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. If you catch TLC early Friday night, you'll be on the ground floor of a new avenue for young women out to impact society, GirlStarter. We'll explore the series and the organization behind it when GirlStarter co-founder and chief creative officer Danny Davis comes in later this hour. Also ahead, one last go for a writer's deal, Megyn Kelly's news magazine, and we go for 4 in a row with this week's classic trivia question. Hello everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon for the program All About Television, 60 degrees at the top of the hour. A very jam-packed hour in store for you, and we invite you to make the most of it by being involved in the program. All it takes, your voice, a phone, and using this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way you're involved is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. So make the most of the room, get your thoughts in, and we'll get right to them. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Bruce Miller from The Handmaid's Tale will join us live after these news notes. What shapes up as the last lick to prevent a strike impacting the upcoming television season is underway now in Los Angeles. Writers Guild of America executives and television producers are needing again to work out a new multi-year agreement. The current deal expires next Monday, and if an agreement is not reached, the Guild may authorize a strike, the first undertaken in a decade. The 2007 action ran more than 3 months and delayed the fall TV start of most scripted broadcast and cable network series into winter 2028. Late-night talk shows will be impacted first and quickly as a strike because they have Writers Guild members involved in their production. There is a news blackout on the Writers Guild producer talks. We'll stay on top of the situation all weekend long and give you another update on Friday's episode. Sources inside NBC are telling Entertainment Trade Press this afternoon that Megyn Kelly's news magazine hour will start in June. The hour will be programmed on Sunday night, headlined by the former Fox News Channel anchorperson. A number of NBC reporters will contribute stories on a regular basis, including Kate Snow, who ended her MSNBC afternoon anchor newscast this past Friday. Indiana law officials have determined stage 4 cancer triggered the death of Happy Days co-star Erin Moran over the weekend. She was 56. Officials say Moran succumbed to complications from stage 4, and her Indiana Trail Park home had no illegal narcotics. Also, we just learned in the last half hour that Chris Beard, the celebrated writer-producer behind Ron and Martin's Laugh-In, The Cheap Show, and the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour, has died. He was 80 years old. And that is news notes for today. Before we introduce our first guest, I'd like you to consider something. Consider that you are hearing me right now, not in these United States, and not in this world. Where are you? You're hearing me from another nation, a nation called Gilead, a nation where if you are a woman, it's very difficult, almost near impossible, to bear children for various reasons. But if you can bear children, you are very prized. You are very valuable. So valuable, your life is not your own. You are owned by the state. What I just described was originally described in 1985 by celebrated and controversial Canadian author Margaret Atwood in The Handmaid's Tale. And over that time, it has been made into a controversial movie starring Natasha Richardson, the late actress Faye Dunaway, and Robert Duvall. That was in 1990. It was adapted for radio by both the BBC and the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. An opera was made in 2000, a stage play in 2002, a ballet in 2013, and a one-woman stage show just 2 years ago. And this Wednesday, it becomes Hulu's latest original series, starring Elizabeth Moss of Mad Men fame. Joining us live is the writer and executive producer of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, Bruce Miller. Bruce, thank you very much for making the time. And Bruce, are you there? All right, hold on. Let me try again on this line. Let me see if Bruce is aboard. Bruce, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Thank you very much for being with us. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Great. Well, we're delighted to have you with us, Bruce. When had you been involved in adapting this controversial story for Hulu?
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry. I missed just the beginning.
Absolutely. What made you get involved in writing and producing this controversial tale for Hulu?
Well, I read it when I was in college, in a new fiction class, so you know how long ago I was in college. It was one of my favorite books. It kind of taught me how to write, and I read it a bunch over the years. And, you know, I knew that they were thinking about making a TV show about it, but they had been thinking about it for years, for like 5 or 6 years. And I was just content to be a happy viewer, you know, someone who was going to watch. And then every year I had my agent check to see if they were looking for somebody. And lo and behold, I called, and they were looking for somebody. I think I was not the gender they were looking for a showrunner, but I overcame that and went in and talked to them about my presentation. And, you know, the fact that it's controversial is really what draws you to it. You know, that's going to make it interesting to write and make it interesting to watch.
How did you overcome the thought that perhaps – some might say, well, this series should be written by a woman because it's about a society where women can't bear children. And if you can, like I said in the opening, you are so valued by the state that your life is not your own.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, I think that, in fact, I would agree that you know, it's a hurdle. I think on any show, you kind of come on when you're the showrunner with some strengths and weaknesses, and you always try to hire people who are going to support your weaknesses. And here, one of my weaknesses is, honestly, I'm a boy. You know, I'm not, there are lots of things I know about women, and there's lots of things that I don't. So, you know, I surrounded myself, you know, most of our writing staff is women, are certainly, you know, the actors, a number of the central actors, our characters are women, and the directors, we tried to get all women directors. We ended up having a scheduling issue and ended up with the remarkable Mike Barker, who was our token male. But it was, you really have to decide that you're going to look at it as a thing that you don't know as well, and also try to look at Offred as a human being, as a person in this situation, where her, you know, she is completely defined by her body and her gender, but that's not all she is. I think it's definitely a deficit, and I did my best. Luckily, I was working from source material, and that source material is such a iconic piece of feminist literature that made it easier. That made, because you're working from some source material that's already kind of led you in the correct direction for the story.
Before you started putting pen to paper, did you have a chance to meet Margaret Atwood and discuss where, you know, have her give you ideas or sort of exchange thoughts about how the story should go?
We did meet, and then we talked extensively over email, and it was more about, you know, she has had this thing adapted. You know, it's been a ballet, it's been an opera, it's been a movie, so she's kind of used to the process of handing it over to another form. So she was very helpful in kind of telling me what the pitfalls might be of adapting it, and that was unique, because, you know, normally, you know, when you adapt something, the author, it's, you know, the first time that thing's been adapted. And if you adapt a classic, the author is often, you know, not around anymore. So this was a pretty unique situation and made it, and was very helpful. But I didn't, and we talked about kind of what I was going to do, but I didn't really show her anything until I sent her the first two finished strips to read. And that was a fun weekend, believe me. I was terrified.
We're speaking with Bruce Miller. He is the writer, adapter, and executive producer of The Handmaid's Tale. It premieres less than 48 hours from now on Hulu through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Miller joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televising an internet radio exclusive. Sound and Apple Band with you live from New York to live your board on this Monday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for Mr. M, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Sound and Apple 04 by name. Friday on our program, my lead guest is doing two shows at the same time. One is about to try to tie for the most popular family drama and longest-running family drama on American or North American television. That show is Heartland, whose 10th season, the 11th would be The Time Maker, the 10th season is now running Sunday nights on the Uplifting Entertainment Network. He's also involved with one of the surprise sensations of last year, Wynonna Earp on Sci-Fi, coming back this summer. Jody Randall will be my lead guest right here, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Bruce, once you got going, what was the most important thing that you wanted to showcase in this adaptation?
Well, I think that was the thing I wanted to showcase was how fucking scary it is, how terrifying the world is. You know, it's so, and that was what hit me in the book. I mean, the book just, it was really, on its basic level, it's such a thriller. I mean, it's such a scary world, and anything bad can happen at any time, and, you know, horrible things, and it's so oppressive. So I think it was, like, that was really the primary thing that you want to do. And that's not kind of based on the story. That's kind of more about the world and the atmosphere. But if that stuff doesn't work, the story doesn't really work. So to do that, you gotta pay attention to details. You know, that's the key is, you know, the world is only as scary as it feels real to you. And so if there's something that kind of strikes you as, oh, that would never happen, or, oh, that, then all of a sudden it's easier to watch because you're like, oh, this is just a fictional place. But if it really feels like in any way, in every way, your world, and changed as little as possible to kind of tell the story, then you really are much more scared because it seems like it's actually happening. So for me, the first and most important thing was being able to kind of make it an environment where you really felt like Offred. You felt like you were always in danger.
How much did the lead performance by Elizabeth Moss help bring that across?
She made the show. I mean, I don't think there's any way to quantify how much. She was the woman I wanted in the role. She was spectacular, she just, you know, owned it from the beginning. Usually, you know, when you start a show, you know, you've gone back and watched pilots for shows you've been watching for years, and the pilot seems weird. They don't seem like the right characters, and, you know, Jerry Seinfeld's apartment is set up all different, and it doesn't feel right somehow. And Lizzie just from the very beginning owned this, and the character felt so, like, evolved and realized even in the first episodes. I cannot say enough good things about her. Not only is she does spectacular work, she did spectacular work in this. She's a great leader for the cast, you know, sets a great example and has been a wonderful producer on the show as well and a collaborator. I mean, she's the bee's knees. What can I tell you?
Mm-hmm. People have already seen this show are already saying that both your work and also Moss's performance could be up for Emmy Awards later this summer. And one reason why is because when people have seen the initial clips that Hulu has provided to press, reviewers, etc. for this, one thing you get is the totality of this world. It's very striking. It's very cinematic. And it is very and the images are very disturbing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were very disturbing to me too. Yeah, I mean, the stuff from the book was disturbing, and in a lot of ways, you're trying to bring that stuff to life. And when you do that translation from book to screen, sometimes it actually softens things. Sometimes it doesn't make it more impactful. But in this case, it definitely did.
Both in front and behind the camera, Bruce, there were a lot of people that you were surrounded by. The cast includes Joseph Fiennes, wonderful actor. Alexis Bledel coming off Gilmore Girls, particularly the sequel that was done last fall on Netflix, Madeline Brewer and Dowd. And then in terms of behind the camera, you got Warren Littlefield, who's on a roll with Fargo, and another great writer, Noah Hawley. Also, Eileen Chaikin, the former creator of The L Word, terrific former executive at HBO, you know, one of the top writer-producers right now. What was it like to collaborate both in front of and behind the camera with talent like that?
You know, it makes it a lot easier. I mean, I think that what you're trying to do always is surround yourself with people who are better than you are. You know, people who can really pick out mistakes and flaws and get ideas that you would never get and push you in directions that you would never go. So, you know, it's one of these things where you want to hire people who are really, really good and listen to them. And in terms of the producing team, they were wonderfully respectful of me and my vision and what I wanted to do, but they were also not shy about telling me where things were, you know, where there were deficits and where they wanted to see things happen differently. And you know, when you list the people, I mean, how many years of experience that you know, ends up being, I mean, it's just, it was an amazing, amazing benefit. In terms of the actors, the nice thing was that they were all seemed to be doing something that was different than what they had been doing. Not, you know, not a ton different, but really exercising different muscles. I mean, Joseph Fiennes plays the commander, and he's terrifying and terrifying and creepy and violent and you know, just it's all very scary guy. And you know Anne Dowd, who you know has an amazing range, you know, also is pushing herself. And Madeline Brewer, who was, you know, is a relatively young actress, amazing actress from Orange is the New Black, along with Samira Wiley. Everybody got to do things that were a little, you know, outside their normal, not outside their wheelhouse, because I actually think this was a place they all excelled, but outside the roles that they'd been cast in. And so I think for me, the biggest thing is what you want to do is hire the right people and answer their questions, be very available to them, and then let them go. Let them do what they do and do it well. And if they need guidance or you feel like you need to guide them, that's great. But you really what you want to do is see what they do with the material without you, but you know, you give them a script, you've already given them a lot of information. Unless they ask, let's see what they do with what they've got. And Warren Littlefield, you know, worked closely with me from the very beginning of the project. You know, he was essential in everything, and you know, there's no problem Warren has not faced a number of times. He was just the perfect person to have by my side through this whole process.
Yeah, you got Littlefield, who's a former NBC programmer, and you got Shaker, who's a former HBO programmer. So both sides of the coin get represented. I believe we may have a call. Let's see if we do. Hello, you're on Savant Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? And I believe we don't. Okay, we will pursue it. If you are listening to us, you want to give us a call, do 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or get into our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Ruth, you were, along with other people, here in New York last Friday for the Tribeca Film Festival. And I understand that the screening provoked a very raucous, if that's a relatively light word, Q&A. And one of the points, I guess, was trying to get made by some of the people answering, posing questions, was how feminist or how feminist in tone the world depicted in The Handmaid's Tale was to modern day. And in one of the answers you gave, you said this is not like a male story or a female or feminist story. It's a survival story. Here's your chance to explain that.
Well, I think it's undeniably a feminist story. It's a feminist world. It's from the book is a feminist, you know, icon. I mean, it's one of, you know, it's absolutely a feminist show and a feminist world. And I think there's other things we're trying to bring in as well. But you know, this is an anthem for a whole generation of people who were both feminists and learning about feminism at that time. And so I think that, you know, that is completely without question. And there's, you know, it's also, luckily, it has lots of other things in it. You know, it has politics and religion. There's lots of places to go. My concern is always about telling anybody how to react to a show before they've seen it. You know, in my mind, you know, what it is, and you just don't want to, you know, be mansplaining to the world about how they should feel about the show, especially before it's been on. So I mean, I hope people see it as a feminist piece, you know, part and parcel with the novel. You know, that would be spectacular, and you know, and we'll see. That certainly was our intention.
We've had a number of writers on this program who have decided that they're going to adapt their work for television and they're going to be in the same boat that you are, executive producing it or producing it, where as much of what they create gets on the screen. People like Philip Meyer from the Pulitzer Prize nominee, The Sun, that's now on AMC, et cetera, et cetera. Is this the first time that you've done sort of a different thing, which is to adapt a current piece of literature that's not your own? Is it the first time that you've taken it on in your TV career?
It is. It's the first time that I've adapted a book, you know, and written the pilot and kind of been the only person and seen it all the way through. I've run other shows, but it's always either been a show that's already existing, other situations. And I've written a lot of pilots, adapted a lot of books, but those two things did never quite line up. And I couldn't be happier that this was the one, mostly because I find the books very kind of inspiring and I find the world very rich. I mean, the places that you can go in this world that are interesting, that are just mentioned in the book, you know, it's one of the great advantages of TV. You know, you can go places where, you know, you can't go in the novel. The novel has such a strict point of view. There's lots of places you can go that – Offred in the book never gets a chance to see. So as far as a project goes, you know, there were other books I've adapted over my lifetime that I really didn't feel like this, after the pilot, offered you much story-wise. Here, you know, even through the whole first season, we don't use up or, you know, even slightly use up a lot of the world creation that Margaret did in the book. So I think that this is, you know, I'm lucky that this is my first completely self-done project. But, you know, and as you said before, the team surrounding me makes it a lot easier. You really do feel a lot safer and like you can take many more chances. And if you stumble, someone's going to be there to grab you.
What if people who have seen this pointed out to you or pointed out to your cast and crew that maybe you didn't expect when you were filming, either a point that gets made or an allegory that comes very real for them, very real for the viewer?
Well, you know, it's really interesting how, I mean, I started on this project before the election began, and so I was writing it during the primaries. I was writing it during the election. I was writing it after the election, but, you know, the new presidency had not yet started. You know, we were almost finished when the actual presidency began. So it was interesting because I didn't know what the presidency was going to be like, certainly, and also I didn't, you know, know that, you know, or I didn't expect the vociferous attack on women's rights and on women's biological rights and, you know, across so many sectors. I mean, it seems like every state that could and would just, you know, jumped on that terrible train right out of the gate. And so it was very interesting to me that people saw so much of that in the material, only because the material was written before before any of that actually was written, shot, and edited before any of that actually began. I saw it too, but it was amazing that was when you are trying to make a story work, when you're trying to make it effective, when you're trying really to kind of do, you know, pay homage to this amazing feminist work, you of course are laying the groundwork for that, but to have all that stuff also happening in the real world while the thing is coming out, people, I'm thrilled that people are making the connection, but it's heartbreaking that they have to. It's heartbreaking that they see parallels in our world to the incredible kind of misogyny that you find in Handmaid's Tale. So it was a surprise only because none of it had happened, you know, when we were doing the story. Now, of course, we see it, but, you know, it just so many places that we went in the show, you know, came horribly true, you know, while we were doing it. It was just remarkable.
Before I wrap up, Bruce, has Margaret Atwood offered any reaction to what you've done so far? And if Hulu gives you a second season, where do you take the series?
Well, Margaret's been very supportive. She really likes the material. She loves the episodes that she's seen, thank God. And she also has, you know, she's given us, you know, we've been able to talk through a lot of the plot stuff, you know, and so she's been very happy. I think she feels like the show, in a fun way, has expanded her, you know, she's been part of these discussions to say, okay, well, if, you know, if this ended up, we ended up exploring this place you didn't go in the book, what do you think it might be like? And so I think that she's been incredibly supportive of the process, and I think she genuinely has enjoyed seeing it come to life. In terms of a second season, there are so many places to go, and I don't want to give away too much about this season, but there are so many places to go, things that characters who disappear from our disappear from our first season that we may follow in the second season. But in fact, this afternoon, right after I get off the phone, Margaret is coming into the writer's room, and we're going to start talking about, you know, these are our first days of starting to talk about season two. But I think that the journey of Offred, one of the things in the book that ends up being frustrating is that the book ends and kind of leaves the reader hanging. I always felt like it left me hanging. And now, you know, in consultation with Margaret, we really get to start to flesh out parts of where that might go, which were never written in the book. So I think that you know, where the show is going to go is where it's always gone, which is following Offred through her journey. And following the society as it, you know, convulses, and as the power, you know, forces inside, you know, push up against each other. But, you know, besides that, I think that we have so much to work with. I mean, I would watch a whole season about that, you know, in the colonies with the unwomen. I would watch a whole season about, you know, the commanders and how they, you know, manage this, you know, terrible, and how they justify to themselves and live with themselves this world that they've created. I mean, you know, everything that we've touched on in the first season seems to be ripe for more exploration. And also, as you said before very kindly, you know, it really does create a world. And once you create a world, it has as many places to go as the real world does. And there's all sorts of stuff to explore in that way. I just feel like, you know, I'm lucky because I was always super curious during the book about what happened outside of Offred's point of view, and now we get to fill some of that in.
The Handmaid's Tale may be a piece of fiction, but how much of it may reflect what we are living today? You can make that decision for yourself starting Wednesday when The Handmaid's Tale premieres on Hulu. Hulu is available on most smart TV sets and many smart TV devices, Roku to Apple TV, Google Chromecast to NVIDIA's Shield. For more details about the program online, go to www.hulu.com. It's www.hulu.com. In a moment, I'll tell you how you can get an audiobook of The Handmaid's Tale, so stay tuned for that in a matter of seconds. Bruce Miller, the writer and adapter of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting the show off the ground starting Wednesday. I have a feeling it's going to be a long and very incredible run.
Thank you so much.
It is a pleasure. And all the best to Margaret, too, as well, and all the cast and crew. Take care.
Take care.
Bruce Miller, the writer, adapter, and executive producer of The Handmaid's Tale, joining us live from Los Angeles. More to come on televised in a moment. You just heard The Handmaid's Tale, writer and adapter. Now, you have an opportunity to listen to the book itself, written by Margaret Atwood and narrated by the star of Homeland, Claire Danes. How? Get a trial subscription to Audible.com from Amazon.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including wherever you are hearing us on right now at Blonde Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook like The Handmaid's Tale, a one-month trial of service, and great customer service because Audible.com is owned by the fine folks at Amazon. And who knows customer service better than the folks in the Amazon universe? So check out The Handmaid's Tale or title of your choice for 30 days. Absolutely gratis. That's free. Just go to audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, and find out for yourself how Audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. When we come back, we'll have a classic trivia question of the week. We've got our third weekly winner in a row. You'll find out who it is, the answer to last week's question, and you'll be able to play a new question for a brand new pride in play. But first, the organization known as Girl Starter is starting up a brand new reality competition series this Friday night on TLC. We'll be talking live here in New York with co-founder and chief creative officer of Girl Starter, Danny Davis, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best radio on the planet, internet or otherwise, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Simply Ageous. Join Kathy Wilson and her crew every weekday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, 6:30 a.m. Pacific. Simply Ageous, exclusively here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can catch the best of each hour 24/7 at YouTube.com and this show and others as well on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. That's the iTunes podcast app offered on Apple TV. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon of April 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 60 degrees at the top of the hour. We may get some rain around midnight, and that's supposed to last all day tomorrow, maybe into Wednesday, and then 70s and 80s. That's the latest weather forecast at this time. We have another great guest coming for you in the half hour ahead. Join in the conversation at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. Chat room's still open. Simon Apple 04 by name. We invite you to be involved. You'll find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. This Friday night, TLC is going to do something they rarely do in all of their primetime schedule, do a competition show. This time, a competition where young women have the opportunity to develop their own businesses. The program is called Girl Starter. It's on at 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and it's based on the work of an organization that's out to do just that. Joining me live here in New York, the co-founder and chief creative officer of Girl Starter and everybody exclusive, Danny Davis. Danny, welcome in.
Thank you, Simon. I'm so happy to be here.
How long has it been to get this new program on TLC off the ground?
Well, we started working on Girl Starter about 3 years ago, and it was actually inspired by then 16-year-old Julia Collins, who told her mom and me, we had both been advocating for women's issues and empowerment for some time, and she said, you know, I think you guys are having this conversation too late. You want to make a culture shift. You want to change the number of women starting companies and in venture. I think you need to get to kids while they're moldable, while they're my age. And so began this journey of, okay, if we're going to do that, how are we going to do that? How are we going to talk to girls your age? How are we going to make this exciting and the opportunities available to girls everywhere and democratize access to the tools and the knowledge you need to start your own company as a teenager and as a young millennial? And so we just started talking to girls all over the country a few years back and then just kept building from there. And what happened, what came out of that was this wonderful competition television series called Girl Starter, which features 8 young women from the ages of 18 to 24 from all over America, all coming together here in New York to start their own company. So that's where it all started, and that's where we are now. And so 3 years in, we are airing a television series. It's truly exciting. It's like 3 years to the week.
What kind of businesses, what kind of entrepreneurship do these women want to do?
Oh, my gosh. It ranges from product companies to tech companies to solving issues of self-care to environmental issues to, I mean, you name it, it is all over the place. What is really cool about what we're seeing among all of the young women whose businesses are coming onto the platform are that they want to solve the world's problems. They're interested in solving, in making the world a better place with new business creation, and that's been the most exciting thing to witness.
What's the most important thing that these women on Girl Starter learn by participating in a television experience?
I think the most important thing they learn is that failure is okay, that failure is a part of the discovery process, right? That when we're starting anything new, we've got to fail several times before we succeed. I think that's probably the primary thing they're learning. I think the secondary thing they're learning is how to be great listeners and incorporate feedback, and also at the same time listen to their own gut. So as they're getting feedback, is that feedback lining up? Is there a ring of truth to the feedback? And is it lining up with the mission and the purpose of the venture they're creating? And learning those skills that are so crucial to what we call the starter spirit at Girl Starter.
So how does this competition coming to POC Friday work?
So how does it work?
Yes.
So it works. The competition series is based on Girl Starter's own 6 steps of early phase business building. We focus on getting that idea from out of your head and organized and proven for that first round of funding. So we call it that launch phase. So the 6 one-hour episodes of television are based on our 6 steps. Start it, plan it, prove it, build it, brand it, fund it. And each episode follows one of those steps through. And there are challenges that line up with the steps that are really surprising, that also give us a lot of real-world examples of how these business-building steps translate into our real lives. And it's just pure entertainment at the same time that it's massively informative. So it's just we're just in love with the show. It's really going so well.
We're speaking with the co-founder and chief creative officer of Girl Starter, that's Danny Davis, and the program begins this Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on TLC. Danny's going to be here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised in a radio-exclusive interview, and we invite you to be in the conversation. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. How do you get involved? Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, which is where you can hear recent episodes of our series. Go there. You can also check out the podcast version on iTunes.com, as well as Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. When you do, you can download your smartphone or tablet or take us on the go. And coming up Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, as announced earlier, we will have the executive producer of both Heartland, now in its 10th season in both the U.S. and Canada, U.S. on the Up Network, and Wynonna Earp beginning its 2nd season this summer on Sci-Fi, Jordy Randall. That's coming up Friday. He's our lead guest, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. For the first episode on Friday, what's the individual challenge that falls in line with that first of your 6 steps?
Well, we work on, obviously, episode 1 is Start It. And the challenge is all about familiarizing the young women on the show with the world of Girl Starter. So there's a really fun, very surprising challenge that happens that they have to go through, and they get, it's like, it's just suddenly they're in, and suddenly they're in the world of Girl Starter, and suddenly they realize, oh my gosh, I am here to truly compete for this massive $100,000 package at the end of this in funding and services for the business I want to build. It's an incredible realization that all of the girls go through that's very powerful. And they're all so awesome and they're fun. And I can't wait for people to meet these girls and see them go through those challenges. You'll be really surprised.
All right, we're welcome guest 844 into our chat room. SimonApple04, if you have a question or a comment for Danny Davis, our guest right now, give us the call, 646-652-2906, or put your thoughts in the room, and we will get to them momentarily. Two other very interesting parties are involved in the adventure. One is Al Roker and his production company. How did he get involved with your vision?
Oh, very exciting. We happen to be having a meeting over at Al's office, weirdly, in the world of small world. And Al and the president of his company stopped my partner and me, Janine Chow Collins, our CEO and my co-founder, and asked us if anyone had come forward to be the production company for Girl Starter. And Al just said, this would be a thrill for me. I am a Girl Starter. My wife, my 2 daughters, I believe mightily in this empowerment space, and it would be an honor to be the production company. So began that amazing relationship. It has been glorious, and they've been a terrific partner, really terrific.
And the other terrific partner involved in this is Staples, the famous
yeah.
hardware.
Oh, my gosh.
And Are they providing the $100,000 prize? And if not, how are they involved? And what made them get involved?
Oh, my gosh. Well, Staples, we call Staples like the mood fabrics of Girl Starter. Project on Runway has something called mood fabrics, which is basically implemented in every single episode of Project Runway. And Staples for Girl Starter is the partner for business building. So they provided services across every single step and supplies, and Shira Goodman, the CEO of Staples, appears in the finale of Girl Starter offering the most incredible sage advice and a surprise that I can't reveal. And Staples has just been with us as the best support this entire time. And what's really fun is that we discovered, too, all of the services that Staples offers small businesses all across America. If people come to GirlStarter.com, they are also going to be able to use those services, and Staples will be available to keep. They became a great partner for us because our platform is so much more about really activating young women everywhere, right? So we want people to watch our show and go to GirlStarter.com and go to Staples.com and start building their own thing. We want to really inspire that kind of confidence in people that if they have an idea, if they have a dream, we're there to help make it a reality.
Should point out that some of the other sponsors and companies involved in the series, one way or another, are Visa, Vera Bradley, Microsoft, the U.S. Air Force, Pilot 10, Clubhouse, the brand of sparkling water, and also some of the folks as well throughout the series. Of the six episodes, each of them showcase a certain aspect of getting a business started. Without spoiling all the plot points or how the competition went in that episode, which particular episode had the most challenge for the contestants? And was that surprising to you when it happened?
Yeah, you know, I would say that when we got to episode 4, Build It, and it just the behemoth of the work, the load itself, you know, everything one has to do to build the company, to get it ready for that first round of funding, the prototype, the financial model, the business plan. And these are young people who have no experience in this area at all, looking at us like we've got four heads, you know, saying there's just no way we're going to be able to do all of this. And then to see the power that came into them, to see them transform and hunker down and take themselves as seriously as they did was almost overwhelming, because I will tell you, we were thinking, wow, this is a lot. This is going to be, this might be too much. This might be more than they can bear. And in fact, though they felt that themselves, they came through this period and found this new strength that kind of propelled them into the subsequent episodes with an incredible amount of grit and strength and confidence. So I will say episode 4 was probably the toughest. When we got there, we, you know, everybody was a little tired. Everybody was feeling overwhelmed, dealing with skill sets they'd never dealt with before. And it's really encouraging to see what happened and to see how they grew as people.
When it comes to finance of their ventures or getting investment, did the contestants lean toward a particular way, like crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding, which is a fairly new compared to, let's say, time-honored things like bootstrapping, asking family and friends, angel investment, venture capital, and so on?
Right. So Girl Starter, the show, brings you to fund it, and fund it on the show is really the award of that $100,000 package and funding and services, right? However, what GirlStarter.com demonstrates on its fund it platform is all of the things you're talking about. Is your business ready for crowdfunding? Are you looking for friends and family investment? Here's how you can approach those kinds of strategies. Here's how you can go find the capital that you need to take your business to the next step. So crowdfunding, for instance, is something that, you know, if you've got a great social network, for instance, crowdfunding could be a terrific opportunity for your business. If you have a very robust personal network, friends and family might be a terrific option. And depending on the amount of money that you need in order to launch your business, a combination of all of those things might be there for you. But that's what GirlStarter.com helps you to see, is like, what kind of funding are you ready for? And what are the steps you need to take to make that funding round successful? So we just try to demystify it all, break it down, simplify it. We really, 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 really want to see a lot of people building businesses. And we really want people to just exercise that starter spirit muscle, we call it.
Danny, your career has taken a lot of turns. And I'm curious whether at age 16 you sort of figured out, okay, I want to take this career path. And I'm curious how your career path is similar to a lot of the young women who are in this series.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful thing to talk about, because I don't think ever in my imaginings I was thinking, you know, later in my life I'm going to build a media company dedicated to getting girls into the entrepreneurship space, right? But over the course of my life as a performer on Broadway, as a dancer, a singer, a writer, a director, a producer, I was a constant entrepreneur. You know, an artist, a performing artist, a visual artist, these are people who are serial entrepreneurs. And over the course of my life, I found that as I moved into leadership positions in music and theater, particularly on Broadway, I'd find I'd be the only woman in the room. And I thought, this is kind of strange. Like, how is it possible that, you know, in the late 20th, early 21st century, we're still encountering this? So I found myself mentoring a lot of younger women and helping them to find their next thing and to explore the power in themselves as artists and as starters. And if they had a dream, I found myself working to help them execute it. And for a very long time, that was an informal thing. And then a few years ago, when Julia mentioned that we were probably having this conversation too late, that light bulb went off, and I thought, you know what? I've been doing this my whole life informally, and now we have this beautiful network of people. We have all the people we need to help girls everywhere to have the same access that Julia has, that all of the young women I had mentored throughout my career have. And we can help any young woman help her dreams come true. So that's how I came here. Now, what I was able to bring here to Girl Starter was my experience in entertainment, my experience in music, my experience of storytelling. All of those things are really fueling the fun that is behind Girl Starter and that is prevalent throughout the show and all over the platform and really there with everybody who's involved with us. So while we aim to help and be instructional, we do it with entertainment and joy and that spirit of celebration that I think actually comes out of that background of having a life in show business.
We're speaking with Danny Davis. She is the co-founder and chief creative officer of the organization known as Girl Starter, and it's the organization that will show up on television for the very first time this Friday night in a program of the same name, competition series, premiering on 7 o'clock this Friday night on TLC. That's 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Danny's with me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Web, New York. Happy you're with us on this Monday afternoon, kicking off your week with us on Blog Talk Radio. You have a question or a comment, get on the phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll let you know who is our third consecutive winner of our Coffee Tribute Question of the Week situation. We'll tell you what the prize they're getting, the answer to the question last week, and a brand new question this week. So get your thinking caps ready. You could win a prize this week ahead. Danny, one of the things that's happened in the last year in particular has been the beginning of organizations out to include more women and women of color, especially in television. Organizations like We for She, We Did It Together, the Alice Institute, the Women in Film Laboratory with the writers with the Blacklist, here in New York, the main New York Writers Room, the recent announcement last week of two women that are going to produce pilots for NYC Life, local news, a local TV channel. One of them could become a five-episode series in about a year. Any thoughts about Girl Starter jumping into this in some way by doing, let's say, your own effort to increase diversity among women and women of color?
Oh, my gosh. It's one of the most fantastic things about being a media company, right, is that we get to shine light on all of those organizations, Simon. So part of what Girl Starter is doing is we're launching this show to really say, hey, world, we're here, and we are here to activate girls everywhere in entrepreneurship. So come to us. We're going to help you. We're going to help you. And our work is to increase diversity, not just male-female diversity, but diversity among women as well. So you'll even see that nod there in our casting for season one. It's an incredibly diverse group, ethnically, economically, education background, et cetera. And we are so excited to be able to amplify the work of all of the organizations that are out there to augment and increase and amplify diversity in business for women. It's part of our job. And because we will have our platform and our YouTube channel and our television series airing on TLC this Friday night, which is so exciting to all of us, we know we have that opportunity to tell the stories of every one of these organizations and really be there with and for them as we sort of, if you will, right the ship. You know, we just want to normalize this. We want to normalize and make wonderful and equal and inclusive diversity in every aspect of business.
Have you contacted any of these organizations to make that pitch of we'd like to, you know, have you join us? We'll highlight your story in some way.
Yeah, we are working. There are a few organizations that we're starting to work with this year, specifically focused on girls' education. And then we'll step forward into those additional partnerships as we move into season two. We felt it was best to show and keep the, you know, make sure we're successful with the partnerships of the organizations we are working to enhance this year. And then as we step into season two, inviting more people to the platform will be seriously exciting for us.
So you've got season two already lining up. I understand you're going to be starting a tour pretty soon for contestants.
Yeah.
Any other TV plans you have in the works?
Well, you know, we are in conversation with a lot of the OTT platforms. As you know, Blog Talk Radio, this is an amazing platform, right, now that we have the internet. And so we've already embarked on conversations to do series in the OTT space. Obviously, we're moving into international format license as well. So we're just working hard to kind of keep it all moving forward in a very, very, I suppose it just in a way that feels organized and wonderful and that we can really fulfill for girls everywhere their dreams of making their business ideas a reality. Our primary goal is to serve as many girls as possible. And so as long as we're doing that, then we feel successful.
Well, one thing I personally hope, Danny, is that your organization does get involved with a relationship with television, whether it's through those organizations as well as through events like the New York Television Festival this fall and also the upcoming IFC Center Split Screen Festival that will be happening in June. So maybe that's not – both of those can be opportunities for the people,
yes,
your membership and people representing to be involved with television or at least to see if TV might be a career.
Oh, my God, I love it.
So let's see if we can maybe get the ball rolling in that way. In the meantime, catch the first episode of Girl Starter, the TV series, this Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. This is the first time TLC has ever done an original series in that time period and on that day. So it's Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on TLC. Check your local there. That network is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, two places to go. One is www.tlc.com. It's www.tlc.com. And Girl Starter has just launched its own website. And it is www.girlstarter.com. That's www.girlstarter, just the way it sounds. .com. Either way, you can find out more details about the series. Again, it premieres this Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific, on TLC. Danny Davis, the Chief Content Officer, co-founder of Girl Starter, thanks again for joining us. All the best with this program. Hope he has a great run in store and a long one, too, followed by much, much more involvement in the area of television.
Oh, Simon, and thank you for the tips. Just fantastic of you. Really great of you to have us. Thank you.
It's our pleasure. We really appreciate you coming on. All the greatest, Danny. Take care.
Have a wonderful afternoon. Bye-bye.
You too. Danny Davis from Girl Starter joining us live here in New York. More about our next show ahead, but first, it's time for our Clap the Trivia Question segment, and we have, for the third consecutive week, a winner. Took a slow land to normal. It happened over the weekend, but our winner is Douglas Frazier of New York, New York, and he got the answer to our question from last week, which was, on the TV series Bull, where does Bull work? We want the exact title of that organization. It's part of the series that's on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock on CBS tomorrow night. And the answer is Trial Analysis Corporation. That's Trial Analysis Corporation. Doug Frazier had it, so he is going to get the grade. The new novel coming out next month for Minotaur Books, written by one of the writer-producers on Bull, Pam Wechsler. So congratulations, Doug. That book is coming your way. Congratulations also to Minotaur Books. Thank you for buying the prize. We appreciate it. And we hope to have Pam on an upcoming Tomorrow Televised not far down the road. So here's our new question. And if you are first with the correct answer before the week is out, you can win the Nat Geographic DVD of their unique and celebrated special In the Womb. We've got some wonderful bonus features, too. And here is the question. In the 1950s and early 1960s, there were a lot of private eye shows on television. One of the most popular long-running was Hawaiian Eye, produced by Warner Brothers. It was on ABC from 1959 to 1963, four seasons. Here's the question. Name one of the private eyes on Hawaiian Eye. Name one of the private eyes on Hawaiian Eye. Three possible answers. We'll take any one of them. And if you are the first correct answer, you get Nat Geographic DVD of its acclaimed special, In the Womb, whose bonus DVD features include a prenatal development timeline. All you have to do is email me with the answer. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from, full name and address. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will get In the Womb DVD from National Geographic. If you just missed the question, no problem. Post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and also on my Twitter handle at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in, and all the best. Will we get four in a row? Hopefully we'll find out by Friday afternoon. And Friday on Tomorrow Televised, we'll be joined by someone who's got two shows in hand, the executive producer of both Heartland on Up and On Earth, coming to its second season on Sci-Fi this summer, Jordy Randall. Jordy Randall from Heartland and Wynonna Earp with us on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. Again, thanks to both of my guests for being here today and all of you for tuning in and giving a listen. Remember, if you missed any part of today's program or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, we've had some dandies lately, check out our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. That's blogtalkradio.com/televise. And check out the podcast version. It's available 24/7 at iTunes.com. You download it to your smartphone or tablet, take us on the go, share it with others. Feel that love. And remember, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our program today? What's your thoughts about The Handmaid's Tale or Girl Starter? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? We'd love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Also, find me on Facebook or on Twitter. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toth, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders, Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Audible will transform the way you hear the world. Remember, it's audibletrial.com/televise. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday and your week. We're back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Of course, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Please be safe and be great wherever you're going. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.